The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and glad to have the presence of your company once again, and indeed your continued support, as we continue to put some content out there for every week of the year, all 52 weeks. That's what I've been trying to aim for as my new goal with this podcast. And to that end, I get a chance to do something that I haven't done. Actually, do a podcast with about a 13-hour time span in between. And to that end, as I'm communicating to you from Louisiana, we go all the way across the other side of the world to Thailand, where we find Matteo Lazzeri. How are you doing, sir?
Tony, very well, man. Thank you for having me. Thank you for staying up. Obviously, it's evening there. It's morning here. Love to talk to you again.
Indeed, indeed. So, Thailand. It's probably quite well known in Europe that there are skiing opportunities to train in the off season in Thailand. Not that well known for the US market. So, kind of give us a lay of the land a little bit. If someone's like saying, "Ooh, Thailand, I've never really thought about that. Where should I go? I wonder."
So yeah, of course, Thailand. Very warm place throughout the year, so perfect spot for some of us in the northern hemisphere to find a bit of warmth during the winter months. I was lucky. A friend from Switzerland that skis at Jolly told me about this new resort opening in Thayang in the Phetchaburi region. And the place opened, it's called Thayang Ski, and it opened fall of 22. And Tony, I wish you could come to do a webcast or see it. It's an unbelievable little place. Man-made lake.
You know who to reach out to, don't you? Certainly, if you want a webcast in that place.
Oh, yes, I am doing the groundwork for that to happen. I can't make any promises, but it's a brilliant site. Man-made lake, course ramp, villas all over, chef-made meals, I found that as a perfect spot to spend the winter and bring some of my students here to train, and then people who book with the resort can have me in the boat if they decide. It's a very, for personally, it's a very balanced approach to the winter time. You have been to our home many times, and you know the rhythms that we sustain during the season, even just like boating. Here it's, you know, less sets, more chilled, but it gives me time to ski as well, to work at the gym. There's a gym on site that I can take advantage of, and read. I love reading. I don't really get to read during the work season.
Yeah, here, I know. You've got a whole library of books in your apartment that just seem to be gathering dust right now. But hopefully you'll have brought a few of those along with you, I guess.
Yes, there's a corner of the apartment, I'll point it out to you this summer, that I collect books for Thailand. So over the year, I collect a book. I'm like, okay, that will be for this winter. And then I just load them up in the ski bag on my way here.
I wonder what the customs officers think. You know, I mean, you bring a big old ski bag and you kind of like shove some books in there somewhere. You know, I mean, it probably raises an eyebrow or two, I would imagine.
It's a weird ski bag, the one that comes to Thailand. It's got six or seven skis, no fins, some books, some screws, a caliper, and a few other random things. So I'm glad here people, Tony, are so nice in general, like truly, truly nice. And we can delve into that if you want. But you know, they always, I see the look when the bag arrives, but they never come. They just give me the bag there. You know, very kind.
Yeah, I mean, people sometimes for one reason or another have this preconceived notion of what Thailand is all about. You know, I mean, you have Bangkok, this big, bustling international city that's renowned for. Well, I think anyone of an adult age will know what it's renowned for. But I mean, go out into the country and explore beyond the confines of the city. And from what you're telling me, it's a completely different situation.
It is. I mean, I'm talking to you from Bangkok at the moment. I'm just coming back from a bit of a road trip that I did as a vacation. But I am headed back to Thailand tomorrow. I personally love Bangkok. It's a city that it seems the whole world is here. It's unbelievable. But in Thailand in general, you'll find, you know, any type of tourism you want, from national parks and cities, which is more my sort of vibe, to islands, beautiful seaside. Food is unbelievable here, and to me, the thing I really try to bring home with me every time I leave is the true kindness of the people, which is not fake, is not prima facie, is really truly kindness. I think is the right word, and that you find in Bangkok as well, from the little market down the apartment next to the skyscraper. No, but it's a brilliant place that I would recommend anyone listening to come and explore, even if you're not skiing, like just to check it out.
Yeah, but it sounds like a heavenly place. I mean, you've definitely sold me. So looks like I'm going to have to save up my pennies here and there, you know, from some of the webcasting duties that I have during the summer, which includes coming over to Europe for a whole series of tournaments, and actually I just did a little bit of research here, a little bit of quick research for those of you that are into the whole Bond movies, that kind of stuff. There's a place not too far away in Thailand called 007 Island, and it was the scene for The Man with the Golden Gun, the one that starred Christopher Lee, you know, and with his laser weapon and everything. Have you ever visited that area where you have crystal clear water in all of these islands?
So, no, I haven't. But I know of a few skiers that came through Thailand that were really animated and were asking the owner about how to go see it. I think they call it, nicknamed the James Bond Island. Looks great on picture, but I don't know. I'm weird, Tony. You know me. I like the little museum that nobody knows because they show some artifact about the history of Thailand. Yeah. So I've seen many things, and there's a lot to see around the ski resort as well, which geographically, to give you an idea, is about 2 hours southwest of Bangkok. So you're starting to go down the peninsula. And that's where the place is. But what I love is that really, I keep saying, is the San Gervasio of Thailand, like middle of nowhere, fields as the eye can see. And then there's a perfect resort for water skiing. So you really get to leave the country as is. And so I feel I can speak with a bit of authority in saying I've got to meet true Thai people, not touristic area. And I absolutely love their approach to life.
Indeed. Okay, so as I kind of hinted a little bit, I'll be traveling to Europe, obviously, to do the webcasting for TWBC, and what I saw on the schedule for July just absolutely took me back, because not only is San Gervasio on the schedule, starts on Friday the 3rd, ends on Sunday the 5th, but there are not one, but two tournaments before the next weekend. There's a PKB Pro-Am, which will take place about a day or so after San Gervasio, and then a day or two after that, there is potentially a tournament over in Ricetto. So it looks like Italy continues to do the heavy lifting so far as hosting a whole bunch of tournaments during the course of a season.
Yes, I mean, look, you came in terms of Sangiovese Prime. I think your first was 2017, and there wasn't much going on in Europe to begin with. To now think that we have three tournaments in Italy only, on top of all the others around Europe, is unbelievable. I think, of course, as you alluded to, it speaks to the quality of organizing tournament organization in Italy. I mean, we all saw it with the Worlds last year, to you know, a tradition of high level tournaments with cash prize that, you know, I know we started 12 years ago. It's great. I think, you know, Italy is also a very fun destination for skiers and non-skiers alike. So if you're an amateur skier, because also on top of this, Recep and PKB also have amateurs. So, you know, if you're an amateur skier, you're listening to this, you've never been to Italy, what you get to do three high-level tournaments in the span of 9 days, I guess. So, you know, it's a brilliant time.
They need a cat to carry you out on a stretcher after the last one in Recep, it looks like.
Oh, yeah, you get to live the pro life, like familiarization tournament, day off, familiarization tournament, day off, you know.
Yeah. And then there's the Portuguese tournament that takes place just a few days, the next weekend after Recep. I'm looking down the list at a provisional schedule, which I managed to grab off of Vince as he tries to get everything situated for the season. It's gonna be a busy summer. I mean, granted, there's no world championships except for the juniors, and we'll actually touch upon that in the moment with finding out who's going to be on the Italian team. If you have that information, indeed, for us, Matteo. But looking at some of the tournaments coming up, about a few weeks afterwards, there's the Royal Nautique Pro. I don't think you were at that one last year, but it's an interesting tournament. If you've never been to Morocco, it's definitely an eye opener. That first one and the first full weekend of June, it looks like.
Well, I wasn't there last year, and for all the accounts I received and what I was able to see, it looked unbelievable. Like a really good event.
We almost lost Candido there. He lost his shoes, and we almost lost the rest of him there, apparently.
Well, I also heard you almost lost the course at 5 a.m. So a lot of challenges there. But what I was going to say is, you know, this is also my job. I do this for a living. So in terms of coaching and working at a ski school. So, you know, I have to be a little bit selective with the tournaments, not because I'm picky as an athlete, but because I try to, you know, have a limited time where I can leave ski school. And then also I have to negotiate that with Gennady and with Claudio, who also have other commitments where they might want to go somewhere else. So yeah, like Morocco didn't happen last year. But going back to Portugal, Francisco was here, the organizer. He was here in Taiyang. He's still in Thailand going around.
Oh, okay.
And man, the excitement of that guy. You know, I'm first of all, I'm so happy he did his first edition last year. And I know I had a little bit of influence, pushing, advice, however you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And to hear him talk about his plans for this year and how he's going to do it. He was so excited that he found a weekend, because that's a big challenge nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. You know, there's a lot of excitement about organizing as well, which is important.
And he probably mentioned that they're looking to put men's slalom into that tournament. They had women's slalom and men's tricks last season, and it kind of conflicted with Funglis, which meant that the men were kind of drawn away to that pre-existing tournament. But looks like the weekend seemed to align pretty well so far as the men's slalom skiers are concerned, and they'll make a an appearance over in Tamar in Portugal.
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, that was a big concern of his 2 years ago as he was preparing for the 25 edition. And honestly, I told him the biggest challenge is the first edition. Like, if you can get a tournament going, that's good. And then you'll find a date and a format that works for you. And I stand by my advice because I think he's preparing for men's slalom this year as a more experienced organizer, as someone that has pulled one out, like together, put one together. So, no, look, that's one of those that I hope I'll be able to steal 2 or 3 days from work and go compete.
Yeah, it's not that far away. It's just a simple EasyJet or Ryanair flight to get to Lisbon from where you happen to be, quite close to Milano. And let's speak about your tournament, speak about your venue, as a matter of fact, because your venue is seeing a whole bunch of changes. It's going to look totally unrecognizable to those that have been there on a regular basis over the last few seasons.
Yeah, and those who have been watching the webcast over the years, the site will look very different. You and all those who were at the San Gervasio Prem had a chance to see a rendering of the project this past summer. And we started digging and dumping rocks in the lake on November 14th.
Wow.
With the purpose of dividing our lake and creating two separate lakes where we could tow two skiers at the same time. I this project, you know, because we have talked about this for a while, started 5 years ago. It started being conceptualized 5 years ago. It was meant to happen last winter, and then some bureaucratic delay made it to where we would have started and not been able to finish the job before the 25 season. But this past winter, it started. And I'm sure some people saw online some of the stories that we posted through the Jolly Ski channels. Gennady obviously is very active on Facebook and has been posting things. But essentially, for those who remember the shape of our lake, it has a certain width until the midpoint, which is about 450 meters, and then it widens midway through. We are dividing that wider part into two, and the shorter part will get a little bit longer. So that will translate in what we'll call Lake One to be the same lake people have been enjoying. And I know you know that famous green buoy where we drop after first pass in San Gervasio.
Uh-huh.
That's basically the end of Lake One now. That's the end of Lake One.
So that goes away.
And then
completely.
Lake. Yeah, it's still there, actually. Like, I really respect that the workers, as they started dumping rocks,
respect the buoy.
Left it there, you know, it's there. You know, it's visually, it's very reassuring. and then the Lake Two will be an 8-buoy course.
A nice overlapping course. I like overlapping courses. They're a rare challenge.
Yeah, but we'll have the 5-ball that goes up and down. So for those who don't know, like in a overlapping course or an 8-week course.
It's a bit like IWWC over in Veen, where they have that system in place.
Correct. So basically that 5-ball would be on your way as you're the 5-ball on the other of the other side would be on your way as you're gliding for the gate. And there'll be a system in the boat where basically that buoy will be pulled underwater. So in effect, as a skier, you won't really notice you are on an overlapping course. Now, it'll turn out to be 550 meters water to water. So it could have been a tight six, like regular course with two islands. I'm personally against islands, so we decided to go for the overlapping course.
Okay.
But 550 meters is a long setup, so it won't feel rushed to prepare for the slalom course.
Yeah, that sound that sounds good. I'm having visions of it right now, you know, of like people being able to ski there over there whilst a tournament is happening on the main lake. You know, it just opens up a whole bunch of opportunities going forward. So, I mean, for a project like this, I mean, it's not only about the funding, but it's also about the local governmental support. You know, And my favorite mayor in the entire world was probably involved there, Mr. James Scaburi and company.
That's correct. That's correct. So I'll try not to digress too much. But in short, zoning was very challenging because the lake is owned by the city, the lake that we operate in San Gervasio. So we had to get permission to dump rocks to begin with. Now, the bit of land at the end of the lake where we are digging Lake 2 a little bit longer, what will become Lake 2, is private. So my father and another investor bought the land, and they allowed the ski school to dig into that land. But then So the challenge was that private property, private land would become public water. But then, of course, they wanted the same volume to be reported on the other side, basically in front of the famous Green Buoy, to eventually build villas. Mm. And so public water had to become private land. So the zoning was challenging, very challenging. It was like a... how would you say, like a three-party agreement between the company that was established to own that piece of land and eventually do the real estate, the ski school, and the town of San Gervasio. And for as much as everyone agreed, bureaucracy is low and it has to be really nicely written and properly put. But that was one of the many challenges. Of course, finances, the big one. Understanding also, you know, because we have received a little bit of public funding, like say to cover 15% of the project, but for that money to be received, you have to be even more specific about a number of things, from square meters of the restrooms to a lot of other things that seemed silly, but they want to make sure everything is correct.
So sounds like a lot of lawyers
involved. Lot of details. Lawyers, architects, engineers, and then little us with AI trying to make sense of the documents. but we're there, man. Look, the first day that the trucks arrived with rocks to be dumped in the lake, I was there like a little, you know, observer watching the first truck being dumped. And Dad couldn't be there because he was in Amsterdam for a work trip. But I FaceTimed him. I showed him the first truck going in. It's been an insane amount of rock, on average about 60 truckloads a day that then need to be moved, and properly, you know, positioned. But, the numbers are really, like, it's overwhelming to be there and being, you know, seeing this machinery so big. The volume, the cost, everything is big, you know. But it's happening. Should be done about middle of March. Lake One should be done in about, I think, like 10 days now.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, we can ski on Lake One February 15th as they finish Lake Two.
Oh, nice.
So basically, the rock spit will be done. So even if we ski on Lake One, the waves won't interfere with digging and movement of dirt.
I would imagine that
things are going according to plan.
I would imagine that the villas will probably take a little bit of time to construct and to actually realize a little bit, huh?
Yeah, well, Dad is very animated to make them as soon as possible. I think he's shooting for next winter. So basically winter of 26-27. I don't have much details. I don't know how much of those I can share yet. But he's very excited about the project. And those villas will be for sale for for people to purchase and enjoy.
Okay, if you listened to that, Vince, you know what you need to do next, pal.
Hey, I would defend it's a good investment for TWBC. I mean, you guys are there every year. It's a big crew, you know.
Yeah, exactly. We've got our own little spot in Europe, you know, in right slap bang in the middle, in one of the best countries in the world to go skiing.
Take note, Vino.
Absolutely. And at that point, we'll partition off and conclude this first part of my interview with Matteo Lizzeri. In 7 days, which will be next Friday, we'll continue on to the second part of this interview. But until then, it is going to be ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.